Welcome to Reflection Time, the program that looks at world events and everyday issues through the eyes of the scriptures, and as well shares with you some inspirational music. Welcome to Reflection Time. We're glad that you've tuned into our program today. In our first half hour, we have a couple of interesting features in our lineup. We'll be sharing the Lifeline Production Health feature as well as an amazing fact. Later on in our first half hour, we'll be looking at some of the headlines that we've seen from the media around the world over the past couple months, and just to look at them from a biblical perspective to see what truth there is in them. But first, I'd like to share with you a recent release by local artist Bruce Moss entitled No Compromise When Babylon Falls.
There was no compromise by the three Hebrew boys. No bowing down when the music did sound. There were only three souls before that statue of gold who were willing to stand for the Lord. When the king of Babylon made a decree that every soul would have to agree to bow down and worship his image of gold, they didn't obey, so we're told. There was no compromise by the three Hebrew boys. No bowing down when the music did sound. There were only three souls before that statue of gold who were willing to stand for the Lord. Then Nebuchadnezzar in his fury and rage commanded that these young men be bound and gagged. He heated the furnace seven times more than that furnace was heated before. But there was no compromise by the three Hebrew boys. No bowing down when the music did sound. There were only three souls before that statue of gold who were willing to stand for the Lord. Then Shadrach and Meshach and Abednego fell down bound into that furnace, you know. The heat of the fire had no power to singe, for the Son of God was with them, amen. There was no compromise by the three Hebrew boys. No bowing down when the music did sound. There were only three souls before that statue of gold who were willing to stand for the Lord. Someday soon now, both you and I will be ordered to compromise, lest we should die. When the music is playing and we're not alive, will we stand out from the crowd? There was no compromise by the three Hebrew boys. No bowing down when the music did sound. There were only three souls before that statue of gold who were willing to stand for the Lord. Where will you be when Babylon falls? Which side of heaven will you be on? When Jesus returns in the power of God, will you be able to stand on your own? Will you be ready to follow him home? Make no mistake, Christ is coming again. In the power and glory of God he will reign. The power of darkness will come to an end, and only the light of the Lord will remain. Where will you be when Babylon falls? Which side of heaven will you be on? when Jesus returns in the power of God? Will you be able to stand on your own? Will you be ready to follow him home? God will create and make everything new, and all of creation will have their reward. From Sabbath to Sabbath and every new moon, all flesh will gather to worship the Lord. Where will you be when Babylon falls? Which side of heaven will you be on when Jesus returns in the power of God? Will you be able to stand on your own? Will you be ready to follow him home? Listen, my friend, we must trust and obey, for every commandment is holy and true. Let nothing be added or taken away from the law God has given to me and to you. Where will you be when Babylon falls? Which side of heaven will you be on when Jesus returns in the power of God? Will you be able to stand on your own? Will you be ready to follow him home? Wake up, my children, the time is at hand. The King of all kingdoms is coming again. So put on the armor of Jesus the Lamb, and you will be able to stand in the end. Where will you be when Babylon falls? Which side of heaven will you be on when Jesus returns in the power of God? Will you be able to stand on your own? Will you be ready to follow him home? There was no compromise by the three Hebrew boys. No bowing down when the music did sound. There were only three souls before that statue of gold who were willing to stand for the Lord. There were only three souls before that statue of gold who were willing to stand for the Lord. Are we willing to stand for the Lord? Are you willing to stand for the Lord?
And that was a thought-provoking song there by Bruce Moss. Are you willing to stand for the Lord? Next, we'll be listening to a health tidbit from Lifeline Productions and Dr. Becky Wong.
Pecans are great in pie, but did you know that pecans have numerous health benefits? This is Dr. Becky Wong for Lifelines. For one, pecans rank highest among all nuts in antioxidant capacity, which means that they may reduce the risk of cancer, heart disease, and neurological diseases such as Alzheimer's. Pecans contain more than 19 vitamins and minerals, and they're naturally sodium-free. Pecans also have a role in lowering cholesterol. Research suggests that a pecan-enriched diet lowered total cholesterol by 11% and LDL cholesterol by 16.5%. The American Journal of Clinical Nutrition suggests that pecans increase metabolic rates and enhance the feeling of fullness, so you eat less. There's power in the pecan.
Lifelines, a public service of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, provides practical answers to common health questions. For more free health tips, call 877-LIFE-TIPS or visit vibrantlife.org.
For nearly two millennia, people believed Aristotle when he said that the heavier an object, the faster it would fall to Earth. But in 1589, Galileo, as the story goes, summoned Aristotelian university professors to the base of the Tower of Pisa. He took two objects, weighing 10 pounds and 1 pound respectively, to the top of the tower and dropped them simultaneously. Both landed at the same time. Yet so committed were these learned men to their presuppositions and to their reputations that they denied what they had seen. Do you believe ardently in something, regardless of general opinion? Is it something that you believe you can accomplish, though friends and even family believe you are wasting your time? Quite often when it comes to biblical views, people's understanding of the scriptures, they often will put aside the clear testimony of the scriptures, the clear word, because of their own traditions and beliefs. As we look at a few of the articles around the world in our broadcast today. Mario Sarkis here in the studio again. Welcome, Mario.
Thank you, Paul.
And one of the first articles I want to look at, Mario, is a quote that was taken from the papal visit in April of 2008, of this year, a very recent one. And it's based on the Pope and his view of the law of God. It says, "Indeed, the world has greater need of hope than ever. Hope for peace, for injustice, and for freedom. But this hope can never be fulfilled without obedience to the law of God, which Christ brought to fulfillment in the commandment to love one another. Do to others as you would have them do to you, and avoid doing what you would do not want them to do to you. This golden rule is given in the Bible, but it is valid for all people, including non-believers. It is the law written on the human heart. On this, we can all agree, so that when we come to address on other matters, we can do so in a positive and constructive manner for the entire human community." And that's a very thought-provoking statement, Mario, and it sounds good. What are your views on that?
Well, first of all, that law that he referred to is the he's referring to the second half of the Ten Commandments, really, how we relate to our human beings, but he left out how we relate to God. And it's very central, because that's the Ten Commandments, especially the Fourth Commandment, is actually the one that brings out in the Sabbath Commandment who the one is, who the lawgiver is. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, it's interesting, he didn't emphasize that part. He emphasized the second half of that. But Jesus said, first you love God, and then naturally it comes to love to man.
Sure, because the first four commandments deal with our relation to God, mm-hmm. and the last six commandments deal with our relation amongst one another.
Exactly.
So when it says, you know, to love one another, it's bringing in all six of the last ten commandments, mm-hmm. but we can't look at that and leave out the first four, which is true.
Right, and I thought, you know, something interesting we've looked at before, and in Daniel 7:25, it brings in reference to Babylon, and we looked at that before, but it's interesting, we're talking about God's law. It says, "And he shall speak great words against Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws, and they shall be given unto his hand until a time and times and dividing of times." And of course, this is dealing with the little horn that we read of in Revelation as well. And, you know, the Bible clearly identifies this power as Vatican Rome, the system that works against God by trying to change God's law and also the times, which is, I find interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and as true as this quote is that we read, mm-hmm. it's important that we cannot leave out the first four commandments,
no.
because the commandments are not complete. Even if we leave out one, the commandments are not complete. So as important as the last six are, we have to look at the first four as well. Because when we stop looking at the first four, it becomes very evident that you could start to lose or water down the relationship that we are to have with God.
Yeah, and James points it very clearly that if you've broken one, you've broken them all. So he puts it in that perspective. They all come as a package. And they all describe actually the character of God.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And there's something else that happens too, is when we stop looking at any one of the Ten Commandments, we start to exalt tradition or man's laws above the laws of God.
And I just thought it was an interesting article here that I found, was written way back in April 23rd of 1901, but it brings something interesting as we're looking at the law of God. It says, "The substitute of the false for the true is the last act in the drama. When this substitution becomes universal, God will reveal himself. When the laws of men are exalted above the laws of God, when the powers of this earth try to force men to keep the first day of the week, know that the time has come for God to do work. He will rise in his majesty and will shake terribly the earth. He will come out of his place to punish the inhabitants of the world for their iniquity." That's a very strong statement. But way back in 1901, you know, we think we're looking at our world today, you know. But I think it shows how serious it is that when a power, when a human institution goes against and says, we can change God's law and enact our own laws and force people to worship us, you know, then they have stepped, they've filled the cup, so to speak, as the book of Revelation speaks. Mm-hmm. And they've taken on prerogative that belongs only to God, to themselves.
Mm-hmm. And it's true that Rome has put forth a challenge to the Protestant world.
Oh, yes.
You know, basically saying, under which authority do you keep the first day, Sunday, as a day of worship, as a day of rest? Mm-hmm. Because they know full well that it's not implemented or instituted through the scriptures, and that it's been substituted by their authority to change the law. Mm-hmm. Because when it comes down to it, the question is, who do you have pay allegiance to? The one who has the authority, the God, or the one who has the presumed authority to change the laws here on earth? So it's a simple matter. It's a simple decision. And just as in the amazing fact that I shared earlier in the program, quite often we are presented with something that's clear and true. The question is, what do we do with it? How do we handle it? Do we discard it, or do we say this is truth? We ought to follow it because it's truth. And one final comment I'd like to make on that, Mario. In Revelation 18:4-5, we read, in scripture, it says, "Come out of her, my people, lest you share in her sins, and lest you receive of her plagues. For her sins have reached to heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities." So God says, when we see something that's an error, we ought to come out. He's pleading for his people around the world. You see something wrong, follow my truth, follow my word, and you can't go wrong. In another news item that came out of the Washington Post, there was a background story printed on the day that the Pope came to Washington, D.C., and a conversation between the U.S. President, George Bush, and Catholic bishop visiting from Hong Kong. As recounted by former speechwriter Bill McGurn, who was at the meeting, Bush told Cardinal Joseph Zen Zikun that the church is the rock. It is the only thing that can withstand the wave of secularization, which says you can kill someone else to make your own life more convenient. He said the Catholic Church must never give in on this. So that's a very broad or bold statement, Mario, to identify a church, any church for that matter, as the rock. What does Scripture teach us about the rock, Mario, the true rock?
Well, this is a famous text that's been used by the by many by looking at Matthew 16:18. He says, "And Simon Peter answered and said, Thou art the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus answered and said unto him, Blessed are you, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood hath not revealed unto thee, but my Father which is in heaven. And I say unto thee, that thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. And I will give unto thee the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatsoever thou shalt bind on earth, that shall be bound in heaven, and whatever thou shalt loose in earth, that shall be loosed in heaven." And this is what the Catholic Church has been using to saying that Peter was the first pope, and you know, whatever Peter was given, Peter was supposed to be the first.
So people really identify Peter as the rock.
Yes.
And because of the chain of succession, they say that, you know, that the papal system is the rock.
Mm-hmm.
But what does the Bible really teach us about the rock? Because when we talk about this, there's one thing that keeps going through my mind. Well, there's a couple songs that come to mind. There's Rock of Ages and On Christ the Solid Rock I Stand.
Yes.
So, you know, when we sing these hymns, these songs in church every week, no matter which mm-hmm. denomination you come from, we're always identifying Christ as the rock.
Indeed.
And in this verse that you shared with us in Matthew 18, or Matthew 16, verse 18, mm-hmm. when Christ looks to Peter and says, you know, upon this rock, he's really pointing to himself. And he's saying, upon myself, upon this rock, I will build my church.
Indeed.
Because we know that, you know, Peter's name originally came from the word
Petros, which means a rolling stone.
A stone, yes.
Yeah, a small pebble that's rolling, that's not stable. Yeah. And we know, just further a few verses down, you know, when Jesus explained that he was going to be betrayed and die, Peter took him aside, he says, and started rebuking the Lord and saying, "Lord, that's not going to happen." And Jesus turned to him and said, "Get thee behind me, Satan, thou art an offense unto me, for thou savorest not the things that be of God, but those that be of men."
Mm-hmm.
So we see here again, you know, it couldn't have been the Peter that he was going to build the foundation of his church, mm-hmm. but on himself.
And it's interesting, a short while later, when Christ was crucified, what did Peter do? three times he denied his Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Satan had his way with Peter. Satan tempted him, and Peter succumbed to that temptation. So it was interesting in the words of Christ where he says, the gates of hell shall not prevail against thee. Peter did give in to those temptations. And it wasn't even after that, Christ referred to Peter and he says, when thou art converted. Mm-hmm. Peter had still not even been converted yet, according to Christ.
No.
And it's throughout scriptures, it's well supported that, Christ himself is the rock. No other. He did not institute that title to anyone else in the scriptures. And you look back in the Old Testament, in the book of Samuel, chapter 2, Hannah had prayed for a son previously. And when Samuel was born, she gave thanks to God. And in her prayer, in verse 2 of chapter 2, he says, "There is none holy as the Lord, for there is none beside thee, neither is there any rock like our God." So scriptures are clear. When we refer to the rock, it is to God only, not to any human individual upon this earth.
Yeah, and Apostle Paul is very clear in the Corinthians, I believe, when he talks about back to in Moses' time when they were in the wilderness, and he referred to rock being Jesus Christ, who mm-hmm. gave them the living water.
Sure, yeah.
So it's interesting that even Peter, Paul himself, Apostle Paul, didn't refer to Peter, but refer back to Christ being the rock.
Right.
That led Moses in the wilderness.
Yeah, because when Moses struck that rock, mm-hmm. it represented, that rock represented Christ for sure. Now, one last article that I'd like to share before our time is up is one that was taken from the Wire as well over the past few months. And it is a rather bold statement that ties into the first two articles that we spoke to today. Starts out by saying, "I think it's important for people to understand that a culture of life is in our national interests, and that it's also important to understand that the politics of abortion isn't going to change until people's hearts change and fully understand the meaning of life and what it means for a society to value life in all forms, whether it be the life of the unborn or the life of the elderly, whether it be the life of the less fortunate among us or the life of the rich guy. I mean, it's a moral touchstone, I think, that we will speak to a healthy society in the long run." The president said that the moral strength of the Pope is key for politicians. "And I'm going to remind His Holy Father how important his voice is in making it easier for politicians like me to be able to kind of stand and defend our positions that are, I think, very important positions to take," he said. Finally, Arroyo said unto him, "You said famously, when you looked into Vladimir Putin's eyes, you saw his soul. When you look into Benedict's eyes, what do you see?" And Bush answered immediately and said, "God." Well, that's a very interesting statement, Mariel. And that came from the papal visit again in April of 2008, so it's fairly recent. Mm. What are your comments on that? What are your thoughts on that one?
Well, I think we should just read a passage from the book of Revelation, and especially chapter 13 is good for our listeners to read the whole thing, because in the beginning of Revelation, then defines the first beast, which is, biblically said, speaking, is the papacy. And the second half of Revelation 13 gives us the picture of the other beast that comes out of earth, which is identified United States at the right time and right place. But Revelation 13, 3-8 gives us a good picture of the time we're living in, I think. And it says, "And I saw one of his heads as he was wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wandered after the beast. And they worshipped the dragon, which gave power unto the beast, and they worshipped the beast, saying, Who is like unto the beast? Who is able to make war with him? And there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them, and power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations. And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him, whose name are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world." So that's a very powerful and heavy text, Paul. But I think it's speaking of our time and what we're seeing in our headlines and on our television set is basically being fulfillment of Revelation 13, where the two beasts that were coming up at different times now actually become very good friends. And there are some, you know, in the future months to come, we're going to see some interesting developments, I think, in terms of world politics and religion, and some of the other things that the Bible speaks about in Book of Revelation.
Because there's one thing that's very clear from the articles that we've read today. The U.S. sees they have serious challenges, moral challenges, political challenges, and the resolution to those challenges they see coming from the papacy. That's very clear.
Well, I think also in the U.S. election that's coming soon, we see part of that that's going to be played out in terms of getting voters, and Roman Catholic voters are going to be a major group. Whoever candidates wants to become the next American president, they will have to court the Vatican in this arena, so to say. But I think it's interesting that only recently did America establish diplomatic ties with the Holy See or Vatican. And, you know, I thought this America was around 300 years or so, less than that. But only until 1984 do we see the full diplomatic ties established between the United States and Vatican. That would happen during Reagan times and John Paul II. So I think we're living in very interesting times.
Yeah, because if we go back, say, 40, 50 years ago, you know, ties between the Vatican and the United States would have been absolutely unheard of. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was attempted in the past, and it was squashed. But it's only, like you say, in recent times that we've seen that unity build between the two.
Yeah, and also says, you know, especially this president, President Bush, had major influence in terms of closeness with the Vatican and with John Paul II and the current Pope, that he's applying, and he's saying there are moral guidelines and we need to listen to the Pope. And I think it's interesting that statement says no American president passes through Rome without a visit to the Vatican, and it's so true that whenever there's a visit to Europe, one of the first things that they visit is Rome and the papacy.
Yeah. So these articles that we've shared today really talk about that relationship between the Vatican and the United States. There's something that we have not talked about in our conversation today, and that's the role that the United Nations plays. Perhaps in a future program we'll share some interesting comments that have been shared through the news, because all we do here is we take news items and we look at them from a biblical perspective. Well, our time is unfortunately come to a close. If you have any comments or any questions you'd like to ask us, you can reach us at radioreflection@yahoo.ca. That's radioreflection@yahoo.ca. I hope you've enjoyed the presentation. If you have any comments or questions, you can reach us at radioreflection@yahoo.ca. That's radioreflection@yahoo.ca. Remember this week to take time to reflect on God's Word, and whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, and whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things.